Well, welcome to CCC. We're working through a series called Life, Beauty, and Ashes. Bob's led us through the last 3 weeks looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, and I have to tell you that it's been a great study so far. As Bob has so often done, he's bringing us challenging studies and taking us through seldom walked books and doing a great job of teaching us along the way. When Bob and I were talking about the series, he said that he was going to cover the life sucks, then you die part, and then I could come in and do a message on hope. Sounded great to me. Then I started reading the book of Ecclesiastes, and I found out that Bob pulled a fast one on me because I couldn't find the part with hope. So like any good Bible scholar, I went to my theology professor, you know, Professor Google, and I asked for some guidance. Voila, up pops an article, 3 ways the book of Ecclesiastes comforts your soul. I click, I read it. In the article, the author cites Hebrews and Corinthians, an article about Ecclesiastes that's citing other books in the Bible. I knew I had my work cut out for me. Then last week, when I was sitting out there listening to Bob speak to us about two being better than one, I had an epiphany. A worship song came to me from the early days of my Christian walk. This is a song that I know every word of. Let's listen. If you know the words, feel free to sing along.
So when I'm lying in my bed and the furniture starts creeping, I'll just laugh and say, hey, cut that out, and get back to my sleeping, 'cause I know that God's the biggest and he's watching all the while. So when I get scared, I'll think of him and close my eyes and smile.
Saw me on TV.
Well, that's okay, because now I know that God is taking care of me.
God is bigger than the boogeyman. He's bigger than Godzilla or the monsters on TV. Oh, God is bigger than the boogeyman, and he's watching out for you and me.
One more time!
God is bigger than the boogeyman. He's bigger than Godzilla or
Let's go to the Father in prayer. Father, thank you for all of the ways that you speak to us. I'm thankful for your written word and the way that your stories from so long ago still apply to us today. I'm also thankful for all those using their God-given gifts to bring your message in awesome ways, like the VeggieTales. I'm humbled and honored to be able to speak this morning. I ask that you move me out of the way and that your spirit would speak to each of us this morning. In your son's name we pray, amen. Now, some of you may have thought that I was kidding when I said that that song was from one of my first Bible lessons. VeggieTales, in fact, played a large part in my Christian walk. Don't laugh. I'm serious. I didn't grow up in church. Even though I was saved before I was 9 years old, I didn't have VBS or kids' church or youth camp or any of those fun things. Early on in our marriage, Jennifer would play VeggieTales for the kids, and I listened and I learned. I heard about Esther for the first time from them. Rakshak and Benny, I still know those names better than Radshak, Meshach, and Abednego. I learned about the Israelites walking around the wall of Jericho through a song written by French peas. Yes, French peas. Bob and his ACU diplomas don't got nothing on me. Last week, as I sat in prayer before Bible class, I was praying for people in El Paso that had just lost loved ones, people in Midland grieving. I was praying for God's grace, and I was praying for understanding. I was thinking about delivering this message on hope, and I didn't have many answers. Then I heard Little Junior Asparagus sing out, "God is bigger than the boogeyman. He's bigger than Godzilla and the monsters on TV." I got to tell you, in that cartoon, they were talking about pretend monsters, like characters in movies. But when I watch the news, I see monsters on TV. I know the lyrics. I know that God is bigger, but where's the hope? Ecclesiastes talks about the meaningless of life, the futility of it all, but God is bigger. I pulled out my iPad in the middle of Bob's service, and I started taking notes, and a large part of this is what God showed me on Sunday. Yes, Ecclesiastes is a book that stands as a stark reminder of the reality that we face daily. But as I spent time thinking about this, it became one of the best things about the book. See, we need to hear about the hard roads that face us. And I appreciate hearing that the children of God that went way before me shared in my struggles. Many times they endured much more than I ever will have to. I've said a lot that some of the most impactful scriptures to me are the ones that describe the most human sides of Jesus. So where's the hope? As I ask myself and God this question, the answer I heard back was this: there's no hope without surrender. Hope is something that is built brick by brick. This morning I'm going to talk about three foundations of hope. The first one is this: hope with your eyes open. I spent most of my career in management leading people and teams. I often would ask a question about a project or a commitment that one of my staff was working on. One of my main goals was to see if they had a good plan for achieving the goal that they had set. Many times I'd hear them say, "Well, I hope this happens," or "I hope that gets done." My immediate response was, "Hope is not a business strategy. If you're staking your career on nothing but hope, you're not going to go far." In the very tangible context of a business or an organization, hoping for more sales is very different than executing a marketing plan. I tell you this to give you an idea of where I normally place this concept of hope. Hope, to me, most of the time, is an act of last resort, something that we fall back on when we either didn't plan well or we've run out of ideas. So last week, as I was remembering this VeggieTales story, I thought, this is a great message to a child that is young and is scared of the dark. He or she needs to hear from a parent about the size and the power of God. Those words are warm and comforting. But remember, I was listening to this song in my head while I was facing the reality of these mass shootings that we had experienced. Honestly, the words rung a little empty. I thought, God, I know that you are bigger, but a child also has to know more than that if they're going to face this world that we live in today. How do I talk about hope in a time of such despair? How do I give or inspire hope in the people around me? Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2 starts like this: "Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises." Verse 8 says, "All things are wearisome, more than one can say." And verse 15, "What is crooked cannot be straightened, what is lacking cannot be counted." I think that we must hope with our eyes open. We must recognize that there is evil, that there is struggle, that there are problems in our world. If we're going to be able to have and to share hope, we need to be able to see the struggles. How would your words of hope sound to the person at work if you don't see the struggles that they're working through? How does the "I hope you're okay" statement sound to the person that knows you haven't taken the time to ask them what's wrong? But when you do see these struggles, either yours or those of others, draw hope from the fact that our Lord Jesus walked these same streets. He shared these same situations. When you lament the death of a loved one, he's been there. When you've been betrayed by friends, he's been there. Lost a job, hungry, outcast, tired, crying, he's been there. So let us not walk around with a blind hope. See the world that we live in. The author of Ecclesiastes did. But we are able to hope more, hope deeper, hope more confidently because of Jesus. He walked the cruel streets of his day, and his hope never wavered, nor shall ours. Hebrews 4:14 says this, "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are. Yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." My second point this morning is this: hope in the small stuff. I have a confession. I'm guilty of championing the latest cause on social media. I'm quick to pick up the mantle of a social injustice when an article or a video moves me. I've donated to strangers that need surgeries. I have two cats because I saw a post about the animal shelter doing an adoption drive in an effort to empty the cage. I'm moved by the national news of tragedies all over our country, some closer to home than others. I know. What's wrong with that? Nothing. I'm not saying that having hope or taking action is wrong on a large scale, but when I was going through my preparation for this message, I heard this: how can I have hope in the power to change nations if I can't have hope in changing the neighbor that drives too fast down my street? How can I hope for an end to homelessness in the streets of New York City if I don't have hope for those in Mission Arlington? How can I have hope for a global solution when I've lost hope in my own problems? I know for me, when I'm feeling that all is lost and I can't find hope, I need to work on hoping small. I need to stop taking the mantle of this cause or that and letting it spark my interest for a day or for a week, only to have the fires fade away. If I want strong, encouraging hope, then I need to hope in things that are closer to me. See, I asked God the question, "God, how can I ever hope that things are going to change? I don't see an end to this senseless violence. I'm losing hope in the world." God's answer to me was, "Let me encourage you closer to home. Stop looking to moving mountains and start seeing me in the little things. I'm all around you if you'll take your eyes off the stars and look for me closer to home. I'll help you find the hope that you seek." Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declared the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." I honestly don't know if this lesson applies to everyone else. When I was writing this down, I started to question it. The whole concept just seemed a little out there. But I know me, maybe not as well as Jennifer does, but I know me pretty well, to know that in order to not lose hope, I needed to be encouraged. That still small voice that I'm here, just look for me first in the small things. I know that my faith is like a mustard seed, but I'm guilty of wanting to skip the growing phase and skip right to the mature tree. As a parent, I think that we all have moments of hopelessness. Most of you here have been doing it for a lot longer than me, even though I feel like I've been doing it forever. You talk until you're red in the face, you repeat the same thing over and over again, and you're sure that they don't hear a word. But one day, when they don't think you're listening, they do it. They say something that shows you that what you're doing is getting through. And it is so encouraging, and it gives you hope that even though it may be small and not nearly as often as you want, they hear you. My last point this morning is this: hope in surrender. I believe that my hope tank is directly proportional to my surrender to the Lord. If I'm neglecting my call to pray, my call to give, my call to serve, how am I going to stand up to the meaninglessness of this life? The very act of surrender brings hope. When we take ourselves out of the seat of power and lift up our prayers for healing, for guidance, for salvation, we're putting hope in action. If I walk around all day and I refuse to ask anyone for help, have the attitude that I'm the only person that can bring about change, how am I going to have any hope in the problems that I face? Because if you're anything like me, I fail daily. As a parent, as a husband, as a son, as an employee, I mess up all the time. If I'm refusing to bring God into the situations that I'm struggling with, then where is my hope? When I walk alone through my days at work, at school, at home, my voice of self-doubt is the only voice that registers. That's the voice that I hear in Ecclesiastes, that all-too-familiar voice that says, why bother? Nothing's going to change. I'm just going to wake up tomorrow and go and do the same stuff I did today. My kids aren't going to make better decisions. My bank account isn't going to increase for no reason. That new prospect at work isn't going to buy. What's the point? That voice is no stranger to me when I'm in control. But, when I take the time to unburden myself, when I hit my knees and surrender and say, God, help me. I can't do this on my own. You're the all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving creator of this world. God, please carry me today. Be my heart, be my mouth, be my feet. God, I pray that you give me the eyes to see this world as you see it. If this is my surrender, if this is my focus, if this is my prayer, what else do I have other than hope? This has been an interesting study for me. It's made me think about the concept of hope and hopelessness. It made me be honest about some of my tendencies. I've talked before about how Jennifer and I, in our relationship, I'm the optimist and she's the realist. I like to visualize a situation with no problems and works out exactly how I want it to. Then Jennifer comes along and applies reason and logic and experience to my dream and brings me back to earth. I don't mean that in a bad way, and I love her for her ability to keep me grounded. But whether you're an optimist or a realist, I think that hope plays a vital role in keeping us going. And I started this study hopeless and searching. Yesterday, I went to an orientation for a mentor program that I'm going to start this month. It's a program that pairs an adult mentor with every single fourth grader in an elementary school. I didn't know much about the program, but I had a friend that I went to high school with that posted something on Facebook. She said that they were looking for volunteers to spend 90 minutes with kids once a month for the school years, and I signed up. Imagine that. I saw something on Facebook, and I was moved to sign up. Sound familiar? Anyway, I got over there yesterday, and it turns out that this is a very faith-based organization. They partner with a local church, and that's where a lot of the volunteers for this program come from. The pastor from his local church got up and spoke about the prayer journey that the church and himself went through to bring them to the decision to partner with this program, and I started feeling a little better about my decision. Then the principal of the school came up and talked, and let me tell you, I was blown away. Here was this 5-foot-tall firecracker of a God-fearing woman. She passionately spoke about her faith and the limits that working in a public school put on that faith. She talked about how her service to the Lord must be lived out through actions and not words. She talked about how her and her assistant principal, who's also a strong Christian woman, welcomed the kids through the front door each morning with hugs. She talked about how the hugs are a tool that she uses to sense the needs of the children. It was powerful stuff. Then she read a letter that she got from a third grader, an 8-year-old. She said she carries this letter with her everywhere, and she reads it when she gets hopeless and wants to quit. This child had written to her, thanking her for being a strong Christian and a Jesus follower and a great principal. As you can imagine, this shocked the principal because she was certain that she had never shared her faith with this third grader. She went and she found the student to thank her for her letter. She asked the young lady where she got the idea that she was a strong Christian and a Jesus follower. The child's answer was this: in the morning, when you give me a hug, I feel Jesus with you. I tell you guys, I was floored. I had spent the last week asking God how I was going to have hope in this hopeless world. How was I going to stand up here and talk about something that I wasn't feeling? He answered me through my study. He told me to look for him closer to home. He told me to hope with my eyes open, and he told me to surrender, and my hope will come. But I found hope yesterday in an elementary school, and it was awesome. After the study, I think that I understand hope a little bit more. I know that I don't have it all figured out, but I'll keep working on it. I'm confident that hope is a vital part of life and an even more vital part of faith. It's a tough world that we live in. Let your hope keep you looking forward when life is pulling you backwards. We're going to stand and sing this last song, and then I'm going to have a quick thought to wrap us up.